Groups and groups and more groups to preview for the 2026 FIFA World Cup. Welcome back if you caught the first episode of our group stage preview, and a normal welcome to anyone joining us for the first time or who doesn't care about groups A through F. I'm Adrian. Welcome to more World Cup coverage from Rabona TV, and there's even more coming, guys. Daily videos once the tournament kicks off on June 11th. We'll have some revamped watch-alongs and much more. Not to mention everything we've published already, about 8 deep dive profiles on teams, so make sure to subscribe. The notification bell also helps so that you don't miss a thing. But beyond that, we need to get back to previewing these groups, so let's go. Now, beginning the second half of our group stage preview is Group G, where we're looking at Belgium, Iran, Egypt, and Nuevo Zealand, the Kiwis. We'll start with the Red Devils, however, as Belgium breezed through their qualification with their new manager, Rudy Garcia, 5 wins, 3 draws, 29 goals scored. And while the announcement of Garcia didn't thrill everybody, Belgium have arguably been playing to their strengths much more. More direct in their transitions, a bit more fluid and dynamic, and playing at a higher pace than they were before. And why wouldn't you with someone like Luka Bakio, or of course, Jeremy Doku, an absolute dribble demon that can twist up defenders before feeding the ball across goal. Speaking of feeding, your strikers are always going to be eating well with De Bruyne involved. Lukaku is still around and scoring as he just did against Croatia in a recent 2-0 friendly win. De Ketelaere is around still as well. Now, if there was anywhere that the Belgium's starting 11 isn't filling me with as much confidence, it would be their back line. Of course, they had to move on from the old heads, but the new guys are young, which isn't inherently bad, but also don't carry as much cachet, as much experience. And when they meet the elites, I think they'll struggle, even with Courtois back to bail them out. I mean, Wales scored 5 goals against Belgium across 2 matches. Egypt, they didn't make the 2022 World Cup. So this is their first appearance since the 2018 World Cup when Salah was in his prime form. Mind you, he found that prime form last season. So Salah can, of course, always conjure something up for Egypt. And they will need him to, as he did in qualifying, where he led their particular group with 9 goals. Those goals contributed to Egypt's record of 8 wins and 2 draws, and they only conceded 2 goals. Hossam Hassan organized their defense well in a compact 4-2-3-1, as he is making history here, the only Egyptian to both play and coach at a World Cup. And by the way, he's still 2 goals ahead of Salah in the all-time scoring list for the Egyptian national team. And you know, speaking of goals, they can also come from Omar Marmoush. That's a pretty deadly combo, him and Salah. So the talent at their disposal, plus the recent shift in positive results, has this nation believing that this Egyptian side could get their first ever win at the World Cup. Speaking of first, Iran is looking for their first ever knockout stage at a World Cup, as Team Melli have made the World Cup 7 times and never made it past the group stage. A record, actually. An unfortunate one. However, manager Amir Gelinoy, known as the General, will look to change that with his effective, if not super enjoyable to watch, style of play. Compact defensive blocks, stay diligent and disciplined, and try to hit teams on the counter. That is, when they are playing against strong opposition, because otherwise, in qualifying, Iran scored 35 goals in 10 matches as they topped their qualifying group and dominated matches, right? Part of those goals, and part of any goals that will be scored in this tournament probably, will come from the Iranian football living legend himself, Mehdi Taremi. He will be their talisman once again at this World Cup, and he will once again wear many hats. He can do the hold-up play, he can be a playmaker, he can be a match winner, everything. He scored 10 goals and assisted 7 in qualifying. But as we know, qualifying is a very different story from the real deal, as Iran, across all World Cup appearances, has averaged less than a goal per game, but there are certainly teams they could beat out here. Now, of course, people will naturally look to New Zealand as one of the teams that could get beat up, but just look back to 2010, right? Very different circumstances, where New Zealand drew every match and were eliminated, unfortunately. Back then, they were ranked a bit higher than they are now, as they are in fact the lowest ranked team at this tournament at 85th in the world. But hey, 16 years after their 2010 qualification, they're here again, and it's difficult to really pull any insight from their qualification campaign. They played 5 matches, won all of them, conceded once, and scored 24 goals. Now, the thing is, the highest ranked nation they played against, New Caledonia, who are 151st in the world at the time of recording. So New Zealand will be playing in a very different universe, and their tactics, you can imagine, will be much more defensive than they usually have to be. Chris Wood, the all-white captain, just recently broke the record for the most caps for his nation, and he is undoubtedly the most famous player in this squad. However, adding further fuel to the fire that could burn up New Zealand's tournament, in his record-breaking match, his side lost 4-0 to Haiti in a friendly. So that's what we're looking at here with New Zealand. And with that, the supercomputer has Belgium topping this group with a 96.4% chance of advancing, Egypt as the second favorite with 75.3%, then Iran at 53.3%. Come on. Let them through for once. And New Zealand at 38.8%, which, I mean, they would bite your hand off for those odds, right? Group H. And this group boasts Cabo Verde, Saudi Arabia, Uruguay, and Spain. Let's start with the Blue Sharks of Cape Verde, or Cabo Verde as they are officially known. They are indeed one of the teams that I did a big historical look at how they got to this point. A look at their history and how that affects their football history, milestones along the way, and qualification. Of course, this is their first World Cup qualification, as they are absolutely one of the great underdog stories of this tournament. A volcanic archipelago which has the third smallest population to ever play at a World Cup. They leaned heavily on their global diaspora to bring in talents from Europe and the Americas. Ryan Mendes is the captain, the man with the most caps for his nation and the most goals, an absolute icon of Cabo Verdean football, and he was actually born there as well. In qualifying, Cabo Verde finished ahead of Cameroon, Libya, Angola, Mauritius, and Eswatini by a comfortable margin of 4 points over Cameroon, as head coach Bubisita's focus on physicality, defensive discipline, high pressing, and quick transitions to attack bore fruit. He was named CAF Coach of the Year, after all. Where he doesn't have the most talented squad, he made up for it with their organization, intensity, and collective spirit, conceding just 0.8 goals per game on average. A team that will really test that back line, Spain, who come into this not just as group favorites, but amongst the tournament favorites as well. That's why I did supplemental content here. A deep dive on Spain is available to watch on the channel. Now, Spain come into this with some pressure, as following their 2010 South Africa victory, they have been comparably underwhelming at the World Cup. However, Euro 2024 was important to the Spanish program for many reasons. One, back to winning tournaments again, and two, showing that they can play in more ways than just possession-heavy, old-school tiki-taka football. At Euro 2024, with Pedri getting injured eventually, they played far more direct to utilize Nico Williams and Lamine Yamal the most. In this qualification campaign, which they got 5 wins and a draw with a 6-0 dismantling of Turkey along the way, they played a more balanced version. They still want possession, but they look to be far more direct. In general, they have only lost 2 matches since the start of 2024, a friendly against Colombia and the Nations League final to Portugal via shootout. They are in some form. Their squad is stacked. They have winning pedigree. Absolutely a team to watch out for at this tournament. Uruguay will probably be the biggest challenger to Spain, but they come in here with question marks surrounding the team. At the time of recording, they are winless in their previous 4 friendlies, including a 5-1 stomping from the USA, in which the Uruguayan players seem to almost be in active rebellion. This comes in a qualifying campaign in which they beat Argentina and Brazil 2-0 each, but ended up in 4th after a disastrous run with just 3 wins in 12 matches. But they made it, and Bielsa is still in charge of this team, and with him, you get a manager who is tactically rigid, employing a hard-running, intense counter-pressing, and rapid vertical attacking once they do have possession. Fede Valverde is surely the star of the team, as he is in the heart of the midfield. Their defense sees names like Ronald Araujo and Jose Maria Jimenez. Their attack is a bit of a question mark in the post-Cavani and Suarez era. You have a Darwin Nunez, for example. He was in and out at Al Hilal, so we'll see how they look, especially against low blocks, which tend to be their weakness. And finally, Saudi Arabia, who come into this tournament a bit chaotic. Hervé Renard was fired by Saudi Arabia in mid-April. This was his second stint with them after he foresaw their historic win over Argentina at the 2022 edition of this tournament. In his place comes Greek manager Georgios Donis, who has managed in the Saudi Pro League plenty and is, at the very least, familiar with the talent available to him. And that talent took the long way to qualifying out of Asia, taking all four rounds and a comeback against Indonesia in the playoffs to eventually seal their spot at the tournament. Goals were a big issue for them with an average of just 1.22 per match, but Salem Eldassari is always a threat. Guy hits double digits season upon season, though there was a considerable drop for Al Hilal this past term. So with the chaos, things will be very difficult in this group. You could see Cabo Verde getting a result against them with how they have performed in the past couple of years. Though Saudi Arabia's defense isn't too bad. They average 0.72 goals against per game in qualifying. Not bad. And the supercomputer does agree that Cabo Verde has a higher probability of advancing as they rank third in this group with 32.7%, Uruguay way ahead with 89.7%, and then Spain, the leaders, at 97.6%. This is the one that most of you have been waiting for, I am sure. Group I, France, Norway, Senegal, and Iraq. Iraq, of course, qualified back in March via the playoffs, and man, what a qualifying process it was for them prior to that win over Bolivia. In all, they had to go through 21 matches to get to this World Cup, but after 40 years of waiting, what's 21 matches, right? Graham Arnold, the former coach of Australia who made them so difficult to beat in the 2022 World Cup, is now the coach of Iraq. He took over for their AFC fifth round defeat of the UAE, 3-2 on aggregate, before the Inter-Confederation playoff win. In all, Iraq have lost just three competitive matches under Arnold. Striker Ayman Hussein is a great story. He lost his father to Al-Qaeda and his brother to war, and in spite of everything in life, he is the second highest scorer of all time for Iraq and the focal point of their attack. But there's also Zidane Iqbal, Ali Jassim, a couple of other quality attackers as well. France, of course, has quality attackers in spades, maybe even the most talent-rich team when it comes to attacking. And I made a deep dive on these guys as well, in case you want to know more about France than this brief snippet I'm going to give you. But what I can say is that Deschamps is showing signs of changing ever so slightly in his approach, allowing his team to attack more rather than being overly pragmatic. And with the talent at his disposal, it's a mouth-watering prospect, right? Mbappe, Dembele, Cherki, Olise. At the back, you have Upamecano and Saliba. In the midfield, you have the likes of Kante, Rabiot, or Manu Kone, who will really elevate his name further at this World Cup. I mean, there's talent everywhere in this side. And this talent took France to the past two World Cup finals, right? Winning the first convincingly over tournament sweethearts Croatia, but losing the second narrowly on penalties against Argentina. Recent results have been very solid, such as beating Brazil and Colombia in friendlies, with the only warning sign being their 5-4 loss to Spain in the Nations League, in which they were 4-0 down at one point. Take from that lesson what you will. These guys must go on a deep run. That is, of course, unless the next two teams really shock them, such as Senegal. Now, this is interesting that France and Senegal face each other in their first group stage matches because, of course, Senegal defeated the defending world champions France in the opener to the 2002 World Cup, sending them on a downward spiral in that tournament. And this Senegal side come in as a top side, capable of upsetting plenty of teams. They initially won the Africa Cup of Nations before it was retroactively awarded to Morocco, but that would have been their second title in three tournaments, and they went unbeaten in qualifying, topping their group under Pap Chow, who of course was part of Senegal's 2002 side that reached the quarterfinals. They have a mix of experience with the likes of Sadio Mane, Kalidou Koulibaly, and Idrissa Gueye, but younger blood like Nicholas Jackson, Pape Maté Sarr, Lamine Kamara, and Ismaïla Assar. Strong defense, quick to transition, they'll be a strong side as well. And finally, Norway, who had an unbelievable qualifying campaign to qualify for the first time since 1998. Their coach, Ståle Solbakken, was actually part of that 98 squad and oversaw Norway winning 8 of 8 qualifying matches, scoring a stunning 37 goals and conceding just 5. They blew away everyone, including 2 convincing wins over Italy. Is that a big achievement still? I mean, it's hard to say. But regardless, their overall campaign was a massive achievement centered around Erling Haaland and his 16 goals, which he led European qualifying, scoring as many goals on his own as both France and Germany did as teams. Odegaard is obviously another massive talent and link for Haaland in the attack. His fitness is suspect this season, not really capable of playing full matches this season after sustaining knee and shoulder injuries. But they have more talents than just those two. Sorloth contributes with goals and is a big threat from set pieces. Antonio Nusa is a lovely attacker to watch. Oscar Bob, Sander Berge. And at the back, the defensive pairing in Solbakken's 4-2-3-1 or 4-3-3 are Ayer and Hegem. At this point, I don't know if you can call them dark horses anymore. They are just a genuinely threatening team that can make a decent run. But as expected, France topped the charts as far as qualifying percentages with just a 1.4 chance of not making it out of the group. Norway are approximately 9 percentage points behind them with 89.7%. Senegal not too far off at about 78%, and Iraq, it will be tough for them, 6.7%. Group J contains the defending champions Argentina as part of a trio of A nations alongside Algeria and Austria, and then Jordan rounds things out. In fact, why not start with Argentina, who now have 3 gold stars? And yes, this is another team I did a more lengthy video on, just saying, but they are ranked 3rd in the world at the moment and are hoping to become just the 3rd nation in history to win back-to-back World Cup titles. Italy did it in the 30s. Brazil in the 50s. Lionel Scaloni's record continues to be stellar for Argentina as they have won Copa America under him twice, and they became the first South American nation to book their place in this World Cup, finishing a full 10 points ahead of rivals Brazil in qualifying, and they scored more goals than anyone else. There are some questions surrounding Messi, given he hasn't been playing against top European competition anymore in MLS, though his output is still wild, 29 goals and 16 assists in 28 MLS matches in 2025. We'll see how he does, because he will absolutely still be a big part of this Argentina team's run. The team in general is a little older, with their only real weakness being in the fullback positions, but Argentina are expected to be a top team in this tournament once again. Algeria up next, they're playing in a World Cup for the first time since the 2014 edition and have an experienced coach in Vladimir Petkovic. He masterminded the Swiss defeat of France at Euro 2020, you probably remember that. Jan Sommer looking fantastic. Algeria topped Group G of CAF qualifying, and their 26-year-old striker Mohamed Moura topped the goal-scoring charts for African qualifying with 10 goals, one more than Mo Salah. He plays alongside Riyad Mahrez, the 35-year-old captain and the creative spark in the 4-2-3-1 that Petkovic employs. You'll find him floating into the middle off of the right to get on his left foot. And Algeria have great options in the midfield: Hisham Boudaoui, Fares Shaibi, and Ibrahim Maza. Ralf Rangnick's Austria are back at the World Cup for the first time since 1998, and they truly play some fun, distinct football, which isn't always the case at the international level. You may remember some of the matches from Euro 2024, which were very entertaining as Austria play exciting, gegenpressing football. Given Rangnick is the originator of that word, high tempo, high pressing, collective intensity, to make up for any lacks of individual brilliance. But hey, they even finished ahead of the Netherlands and France. But there are talented individuals, of course, such as Christoph Baumgartner of RB Leipzig, who got over 20 goal contributions this past season. There's Sabitzer, Konrad Leimer, and the older fellas, Arnautovic and Alaba. Fitness has been an ongoing concern for Alaba, unfortunately. Don't be surprised if he doesn't feature as much as he would probably like to. They got here playing Rangnick's distinct style and qualified with 6 wins from 8 matches and only conceding 4 goals. 4th best defensive record in European qualifying. And finally, Jordan, another one of the teams that I did a full history video on their qualification, how their football was shaped by their history, etc. Now, they have looked fantastic under Jamal Salami, finishing just behind South Korea to qualify for their first ever World Cup with just 2 losses in 10 matches. They were one of 3 Asian sides that didn't lose a single match playing away from home and only conceded 5 goals. Tough to play against, sit in a compact defensive block, stay organized, and transition quickly on the flanks. Moussa El Tamari is the most well-known Jordanian in football as he plays for Stade Rennais and has had a solid career in France. He's the most prominent of an attacking trio that actually contributed 70% of Jordan's total goals in qualifying. They have been in great form in the last few years. They made the final of the Asian Cup in 2023 and narrowly lost to the 2025 Arab Cup final to Morocco. Tough, tough group, but they are capable of taking points off of an Algeria or Austria, you'd think. So the supercomputer has Argentina as the runaway leaders with 97.4% chances of qualifying. Then there's, you know, it gets a little bit tighter between Austria and Algeria. Austria ahead with about 82% to approximately 74% for Algeria, and Jordan hanging tough with 16%. Group K is pretty nice. Colombia, Portugal, DR Congo, and Uzbekistan. We'll kick off with Colombia, who come in as a very strong team that is capable of causing major problems for just about anybody. You have James Rodriguez, who showed at Copa America 2024 that no matter where he's playing his club football, he can absolutely deliver for his country. A country that actually failed to qualify for the 2022 World Cup, so Colombians are hungry for some Mundial action. Nestor Lorenzo took over after 2022 and had Colombia on a 28-match unbeaten run that only ended in the 2024 Copa America final. In qualifying, they finished third, scoring 28 goals, which is the second highest in CONMEBOL qualifying. Luis Diaz, of course, is a big part of that attack. James had the most assists. The only concern would be that Colombia absolutely lost some steam in the latter half of qualifying, going winless in six matches, including three losses on the spin, and then three draws, and then two friendly losses to France and Croatia in March. But as we have spoken of, they have the squad quality to do some damage when they are on song. DR Congo are back at the World Cup for the first time in 52 years, when they appeared as Zaire in 1974. That was a tournament to forget, losing all of their matches, scoring zero, and conceding 14. However, this will be a memorable one no matter what happens, with the cherry on top being that DR Congo have performed fairly well in recent years. They beat Cameroon in the semifinals of their continental playoffs with a final minute goal from Mbemba, then defeated Nigeria on penalties to advance to the Inter-Confederation playoff, where a 100th minute goal from Twanzebe sealed their qualification. With Sebastian Desabre utilizing a counter-attacking compact 4-2-3-1, they had 7 clean sheets in 13 qualifying matches, conceding just 6 goals in the qualifying group stage. Chancel Mbemba is at the heart of their defense. Wan-Bissaka declared for DR Congo in August 2025, and you can look to the likes of Yohan Wissa and Cedric Bakambu in the attack. Uzbekistan, that's another team I did an in-depth video on, so be sure to check that out for much more content on them. But yes, they are the first Central Asian team to ever qualify for the World Cup, and they did so just behind Iran in qualifying. Through two different coaches, Uzbekistan built out their qualifying campaign based on their defensive solidity, losing just one time with Man City's Abdulkadir Kusunov, the first Uzbek player to appear in the Premier League. At the other end of the pitch, you have Eldor Shomurodov, the country's all-time leading scorer, who despite a poor miss against Canada that went viral in a friendly, is coming into this tournament off of a great season with Istanbul Besiktas here, and his teammate, the young winger Abobsek Fazuliev, provides quality in the attack as well. Cannavaro took over coaching this team. He's had a very spotty record as a manager, so we'll see how he does. And finally, we have Portugal. And whenever people speak of contenders, Portugal tends to be a sticking point. The quality is there to see, but the play style and performance in major tournaments has been missing in recent outings. But they are Nations League champions. Take what value you may from that. And under Martinez, Portugal has lost just 3 competitive matches. Qualifying was going well until that shock loss to Ireland that shook things up a bit. Then the draw against Hungary complicated it further, only for Portugal to beat Armenia 9-1. Hat-tricks for João Neves and Bruno Fernandes in that one. Again, this team is stacked with talent, especially in the midfield, and has an icon of the game in Cristiano Ronaldo leading them. I will be interested to see if he is an automatic starter and how long he will play in each match, and will he break his knockout stage hoodoo, of which he hasn't scored in a World Cup knockout match. Portugal do tend to struggle against teams who deploy a low block. They just cross into the box, so keep an eye out for that. But low blocks or not, Portugal is seen as the top team in this group with a 97% chance of advancing, while Colombia follows them with approximately 85%, 46% for DR Congo, and 33% for Uzbekistan, which is not bad at all. We've certainly seen lower numbers than 33%. The final group, Group L, has England, Croatia, Ghana, and Panama, We are almost done here, folks. Croatia, one of the better performing World Cup teams of the past two tournaments, making a final and finishing third in 2022. But I come to you at a potentially difficult time as there are major rumblings that Luka Modric could retire at the conclusion of this tournament, like retire completely from football. Sad for Croatia and the rest of the football world. He's still central to this Croatia team, but that's not confirmed at the time of recording, so grain of salt, etc., etc. What I can confirm is that this is Croatia's seventh World Cup, and they were dominant in World Cup qualifying with 22 points from a possible 24, with a marquee 5-1 win over fellow qualified nation, Czechia, laying down a marker. Dalic likes his team to play compactly, and with the new guard, guys like Gvardiol and Luka Vucevic, their defense is in good hands. Their midfield is experienced with Modric, Kovacic, Pasalic, etc. Budimir had a great season in La Liga, and Ivan Perisic is still dangerous. Even at 37, he was scoring and assisting against Liverpool, Napoli, and Atletico Madrid in the Champions League. So a mix of youth and experience for sure. Never sleep on Croatia. Ghana are back after featuring in the group stage of the 2022 World Cup. They had a very strong qualification campaign with 8 wins, a draw, and a loss, scoring 23 goals in that time frame as well. With that in mind, the coaching situation is a funny one. Otto Addo was sacked at the end of March, and Carlos Queiroz, quite the journeyman, was brought in. He has a ton of experience, of course, especially having managed at 4 different World Cups, but he has just 4 wins in 16 matches across those tournaments. So let's see how he does with Ghana. Their form coming into this is a bit of a concern. They lost 5 friendlies in a row before a draw with Wales, but the hope will be that they can defend well enough to give opportunities to the likes of Antoine Semenyo as their most dangerous attacker, you know, cutting inside from the right flank to score and assist. Mohamed Kudus is a big miss for them, as he's still injured. Panama are playing in just their second World Cup after Russia 2018. Funnily enough, they are sharing a group with England once again. Things didn't go well for them then. Bottom of the group, -9 goal difference. England did not treat them kindly. But they come into this tournament with their highest ever world ranking at 33rd. And they were unbeaten in CONCACAF qualifying. Thomas Christensen, a Danish coach, has been in charge for 6 years now, and he has improved Panama. Well, ignore that result against Brazil. Brazil are fantastic, and it was just a friendly, right, guys? Goals have been a bit of a problem for them as they missed 29 big chances in qualifying despite generating the highest expected goals in the region. That, and they do tend to crumble a little bit when they're pressed high, but other than that, they have become massive in CONCACAF. 2023 Gold Cup finalists, 2025 Nations League finalists, and they helped to eliminate the host USA in the 2024 Copa America as well. And finally, England, who are considered amongst the contenders. I did a video on them for my contenders series if you want more depth. I'm sure you guys can say that with me at this point. Part of the reason why they are rated so highly is down to having Thomas Tuchel as their coach. He navigated qualifying flawlessly, as would be kind of expected with their qualification opponents. They won every match, didn't concede a goal. Now, that part, that is very impressive. Their style of play is more aggressive than the pragmatism of Southgate, though Tuchel is still a somewhat pragmatic manager, especially when facing tough opposition. England are supremely talented in the attack. Harry Kane is perhaps the best all-round striker in the world right now. Then you have Saka, Rashford, Gordon, and Eze. In the midfield, you have Bellingham, Rice, Elliot Anderson, which makes for a tough midfield to break down and very creative. But the back line is of question, and they were exposed on the counter by Senegal in a recent friendly that they lost. So that's an area for Tuchel to organize the team a bit better. They have a great track record at tournaments lately, but that falls slightly when facing the really big nations. When they go in as the favorite, count on them to win. But when they meet the bigger teams, it's a bit of a toss-up. Naturally, the supercomputer has England in first place as far as qualification chances go. Big numbers here, as you can see, with 97.9% to qualify. Croatia's 83% with some great separation over Ghana's 58%. And then Panama hanging around at 22.3%. Guys, what a run. If you watched every single minute of these preview videos, I am shocked and super, super thankful to you. So thank you. We still need to predict the entire tournament. Well, the group stage. We'll start with the group stage. So be sure to stick around for that coming very soon. All right. Thanks, guys. It's almost World Cup time. See you in the next video. Take care.